My guest today, Dave Bouchard. He's again a congressional candidate, independent candidate for the 2nd Congressional District in Northeast Iowa. Dave, welcome back to the program.
Thanks, Ed.
We've talked policy, not for the hard stuff.
All right.
Politics.
Okay.
What are you thinking running as an independent in a seat that might tilt the balance of the U.S. House at a time when Donald Trump is becoming more and more unpopular? That's not my opinion, folks. That's an opinion that a lot of people have. Right now, there's a sense that, you know, Donald Trump is out of control, whether you call him an authoritarian or a fascist or an oligarch, and he's consolidating power. And the more he does that, the less and less our democracy is going to be able to thrive. Mm-hmm. The more and more it's under attack. And so people are saying, well, we need either have Republicans who are independent, like Thomas Massey was, mm-hmm. or Democrats who are going to provide a wall against Trump's march toward authoritarianism. How do you respond to that kind of criticism?
Sure. So what I'll start off with is I am not, as an independent and as someone that has seen no deliverable gains for the working class from either party, no matter who's in power, over my entire lifetime, and I'm 31 years old, I'm still a young guy, but it's just been failure after failure. I'm not entirely concerned about who's going to maintain power. I'm not concerned about this king of the hill mentality of who. What can we do to, maintain the institutional levels of control? I am looking at the opportunity that's facing us right now. Some political educators and political scientists will say that we are entering our seventh party structure. There's an opening.
Seventh party structure.
So we've had different
never
structures.
Heard this.
We've had different iterations of parties that are in control in the past.
Okay.
And so we're entering
the Whigs at one time.
No, the Whigs at one time. You know, the Greenbacks had their little bit of a rise and stuff over
the Populist Party.
The Populist Party, the Bull Moose Party, and we're entering into a new opportunity. And what I'm looking at is not so much can we have Democrats or Republicans win control, because that's never delivered anything consequential for us. What can we do as independents, which are the plurality here, what can we do to take advantage of this opportunity to build a real populist movement that isn't going to just be crushed from within these two parties?
And a lot of people who agree with you would say, yeah, normally that makes sense, but this election is different because of the consequences.
Oh, it's always the most important election of our lifetime, every single time. You know, the last election of our lifetime was the most important. We had President Biden who said nothing will fundamentally change. And what did he do when he got in there? He started working to actively fund and facilitate a genocide. He stopped a railroad strike, which was the biggest betrayal of workers in modern American history by the Democratic Party. Just a list of the litany of betrayals. And let me just say, when they stopped that railroad strike, you look at states like Pennsylvania, right? Pennsylvania, one of the strongest union states in this country. Every Democrat in Pennsylvania voted to stop the railroad strike. The only one that didn't was the Republican Senator Toomey, for goodness sake. We don't see anything gained from either party. So I'm not concerned about helping that party or that party maintain power. I want to say, what can we do to get 3, 4, 5 independents in there to break the opportunity of any kind of majority from either party and focus back on the real issues people want? Stop the omnibus spending bills, the giant bills where they hide different earmarks in it. Force votes on universal health care as an American guarantee. Force votes on term limits.
So you would support a universal health care system?
Absolutely. I believe that's okay. My most fiscally conservative policy is universal health care.
Well, we definitely pay a lot more in this country for less care than you would get in other countries that have some version of universal care.
And you'd think that we have the best health care in the world because of that, right, Ed?
And we have great system. We have great care if you can access it and
if
pay for it.
If you can access it. And we we rank 14th in quality and dead last in health care outcomes, and we have a lower life expectancy than most other developed nations. Ed, that's not freedom, it's failure.
That's back to policy, too, and that's an important one that we missed the first segment. But you're running as an independent.
Yes.
So you're not on a party ticket.
No.
And is that you're talking about the need for a third party, for a party to replace the Democrats and Republicans, but you're not running as a party person.
No.
Why not?
Well, I believe that we need to build trust with people first. And I do want to say I'm the first no-party candidate to qualify for the ballot in Northeast Iowa in modern history. There's been an independent party. There's been libertarians. Very, very rarely in Iowa politics is there a no-party candidate. We've built all of this infrastructure from the ground up, and I can't say that we know enough about what the populist sentiment in America is to say we're going to be this new party or that new party. Mm-hmm. You see the DSA trying to do their thing. You see Tucker Carlson and Marjorie Taylor and Thomas Massie doing their thing about forming a third party. I believe first, before anything, we need to build trust. And I think that is by going to where people are at, and that is independent. Once we build that trust and that infrastructure, we can have a conversation about what does a party look like. So, do we want a party?
Okay, well, yeah, I mean, there was a time when there were no political parties in the U.S., but that was a very short period of time at the very beginning of the country's history.
Yes, yes.
But, I mean, how closely do your priorities line up with the Libertarian Party?
In some senses, they do. Libertarian Party was definitely ahead of the ball on a number of issues like legalized marijuana, gay marriage. You know, they were for gay marriage for decades. I think the prominent members of the Democratic Party, Hillary Clinton, didn't come out in favor of gay marriage till 2014.
I got a primary opponent back in 1996 because I supported marriage equality.
Really?
Yeah. See, a Democratic primary opponent, because Democrats were so opposed to that.
So I think that libertarians, you know, we align on some things, yeah. But, you know, call me crazy, but I think that we still need national road systems. We need.
What does that mean?
We need roads that are maintained beyond just localized community. We need some kind of federal infrastructure to maintain our roads and bridges and stuff.
How about a national train system?
I would love a national train system. Okay. I would rather be focusing on a national train system than this heavy investment into the tech and AI and data center infrastructure. I know the unions want the jobs. Well, unions should be a little bit stronger in what the American people want.
Okay, so you are independent, but my understanding is the Forward Party has endorsed you.
Yes, they have.
So you do have you do have some partisan backing. From a third party.
I do. I do have some partisan backing from the Forward Party. The thing about the Forward Party, though, is they don't have any kind of dogmatic policy platform that they stick to. They believe that the candidates that they endorse or the candidates that run as Forward Party should shape their policy and priorities in accordance to what their local economy and constituents' desires and interests are. So they don't have any kind of overarching national policy. Theirs is run and support the community that you live in.
Hmm. Is it hard to build a party with a platform that's almost a non-platform that's so broad?
I would imagine that it is, and they're still in their infancy, so mm-hmm. I'm guessing that that'll become more concreted as they build power. But I think they've made the right decision in not locking themselves into one ideology or another. I think that's been to the detriment of folks like the Tea Party, for example. You know, they were locked in their dogmatic priorities, and then they ended up just being consumed by the Republican Party. Did they make some gains in Congress? Sure they did, but they have no real independent power beyond obstruction at this point. Mm. And I'm not looking for obstruction. I'm looking to build working class power.
And do you think the Forward Party is the best vehicle forward to accomplish that?
I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say it's the best vehicle. I am not a forwardist. I'm not I'm open to the idea of collaboration with some of these insurgent parties, you know, whether it's the Forward Party or, you know, I'll be honest, this thing that Tucker Carlson and Marjorie Taylor Greene and Thomas Massie are building, let me be very clear. If they're building some kind of party infrastructure that is hyper-focused on the common denominator of taking on the ruling elite class, the Epstein class, and they're working towards true deliverable gains for the working class, I'm open to a conversation, dialogue, and potential collaboration with that.
Some would say that given Tucker Carlson's perspective on many issues and Marjorie Taylor Greene's, you know, past statement, even though they've broken with President Trump, mm-hmm. that their perspective would not suggest that it's going to be a, you know, whatever political party they might come up with would be really friendly to the average person.
Then they're going to have to make that decision. If they want to be a successful party, they need to be a populist party that answers these real sentiments and needs.
Isn't there an element within the Democratic Party that is becoming more populist?
In some places, like New York, where they've had decades and decades to do trial and error and then finally win a socialist, for example, sure, you could say, you know, it's a safe, relatively Democrat area. Even the Republicans are fairly progressive Republicans over there. They've had decades of practice. Out here, you know, what happened in New York would not translate well to Iowa.
Well, what about Michigan? Yeah, with Alcee winning the Democratic primary there. Or even Francesca Hong losing the Democratic primary for governor of Wisconsin by a very, very small, I think 4,000 votes.
I think in the elevated emotion that we're in right now when it comes to the genocide in Israel, when you've got a candidate like Haley Stevens who says, Israel comes to me in my dreams, I would say it's pretty, you know, most Americans don't want us to be over there right now. They don't want us to be funding a genocide. Mm-hmm. I would think if you're up against a candidate like that, it's a shoo-in that you're going to either get close or defeat him.
So the Republican Party of Iowa, with help from the National GOP and with help from Robert Kennedy Jr., pushed the Libertarian candidates to try to drop out of the first, second, third congressional races and the governor's race. Mm-hmm. And the only place they didn't succeed was with your district, with Rick Stewart is still in the race. But is it possible that there may be efforts or already have been efforts by either the Democratic or Republican candidates to push you out of the race?
You know what? Yeah, there has been. And you're about to break a story right here, Ed. My Democratic.
Well, lucky me.
Lucky you. I've thought about when I'd go public with this, but here we go. Democratic candidate Lindsey James. Early in this race, she was speaking to some, you know, I've been in the political world for a long time, and she had spoken to a couple folks that I know in the political world, and she had asked what can be done to get Dave to stop all of this.
Meaning not run?
Not run, exactly. She calls me a gotcha candidate. Maybe because I have policy and she's got platitudes, but and another time when I was iced out of the Luther College Forum, which I was invited to, and then some folks threw a fit internally and got me kicked out of it just 48 hours beforehand. I went to that forum still and I participated and I listened to the Democratic candidates that were on the stage. Afterwards, Lindsey James came up to me and she said, "You know, once I get into Congress, I'm going to need folks like you on my team up there in my office." She said, "I plan on getting on the House Committee on Agriculture, and I need folks that know that work on the ground." So there's already been kind of ad hoc efforts to persuade me to leave the race in exchange for political favors. That's the kind of disgusting actions that I'm fighting against.
And can you prove that?
Didn't have a recording on. No, it's just what I say.
Yeah. And again, Rick Stewart had the same situation.
Yes, he did.
He had RFK Jr. offer him basically a position with the Trump administration.
Yes,
if he would drop out. The same thing happened to me when I ran for Congress back in 2008 against Leonard Boswell. He offered me a job if I would get out of the race.
Yeah.
So I know it happens.
Mm-hmm. It does. Yeah.
And it's his. With you, that was my word against his. And I can absolutely assure you, 100%, that's what he told me. Well, that wasn't him directly, it was one of his surrogates.
Sure, sure.
In this case, it was the actual candidate.
It was the actual candidate. Ouch. It was actually Lindsey James. And one
that's
thing that I want to...
sloppy.
It is very sloppy. You know, and it's I want to affirm that my only loyalty lies with the working class. And that's without compromise.
Hmm. Well, I guess one other question that always comes up, more often than it should really, is how much money have you raised?
Around $30,000,
okay.
Which I know that some people say, "Oh, that's not a lot." Well, let me throw this at you here. The Democrat and Republicans, when they were running in their primary, they had the entire political party infrastructure behind them, which means that they had county parties in all 22 counties across this 13,000 square mile district that were harvesting signatures for them. They had all the money in the world, both state and national money, and they spent $1.4 million combined to get on the ballot, Joe Mitchell and Lindsey James. We spent a couple thousand dollars and we built all of our infrastructure from the ground on up. Everything was against us.
How many signatures did you need?
We needed to get 1,700 signatures across 11 counties. We got over 2,200 signatures or 2,300 signatures in all 22 counties, over 200% in every county.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to join us, Dave. Folks, Dave Bouchard has been my guest today. He's a congressional candidate up in Northeast Iowa. And again, as the FCC requires, and I think this is actually a good requirement, I've invited the other candidates on as well. Mm-hmm. Rick Stewart has been on this program, but I have not heard back from either Lindsey James or Joe Mitchell. So anyway, best of luck. I've been there and done that. Running for Congress is not easy.
No, it's not.
Occasionally it's fun. Oftentimes it's not.
But and I won't be done after this. My vow is that there will be an independent on the ballot in 2028 in every district. We're building a movement.
All right. Well, good luck.